You're listening to the Deal Farm Podcast with Ken Corsini, educating, inspiring, and connecting you to real estate deals. And now, your host, Ken Corsini.
Hey, this is Ken Corsini with the Deal Farm. On today's Best Deal Ever episode, I've got Jay Massey. Jay, how you doing?
I am glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Man, thanks for being on the show. I appreciate it. We were just kind of joking around about the fact that Jay has got such a better radio voice than myself and found out he doesn't even use an EQ. I mean, this is straight into his computer where my EQs, you know, I got the mids and the bass turned up trying to sound good, and he's got nothing. He just naturally sounds good.
Yeah. It's a gift.
That's awesome. So, well, quick introduction. So Jay is, he's a full-time real estate investor. He's an entrepreneur. He's a podcast host, and some of you have probably heard of his podcast. He's an author. He's a speaker. He's a coach. And Jay and I were actually introduced years ago. I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago.
Sounds right.
Is that sound about right? Through the real estate guys. And he was raising private capital. He had a pretty good sized fund at the time. We talked about doing some stuff together, and it's been a while since we've spoke, so I know he's raised a heck of a lot more capital since then. And you've also obviously done a lot more since then with the podcast and whatnot. But I'd love to, maybe if you just took us all the way back to the beginning, before you and I ever met, before you ever got into real estate, what were you doing and how did you find your way into real estate?
Sure, absolutely. And most immediately before real estate, I was technically homeless and squatting in rent-owned property. Now, I will explain all of that. So that people have some frame of reference and understand. My wife we had experienced a miscarriage before. And then when she got pregnant again, she has a condition known as hyperemesis. And at that time, I was a self-employed financial planner. And here's my wife. Hyperemesis simply means that she's unable to eat or drink while pregnant. And wow, that was a very stressful situation. So for me, what I decided to do is I went to go play volleyball to try to blow off some steam. I jumped, landed on a guy's head, punctured my lung, and then I could not walk and talk because I was born with asthma and I had a drug interaction, which made it impossible for me to walk and talk simultaneously without fainting. That led to a number of things, and I started selling our personal possessions on eBay. So let me explain what I mean. I would go to our garage and just, you know, put that item on eBay. Then I go to our friend's garage. Eventually, it got to the point to where I would go to other people's garage sales, buy that something that I thought would resell on eBay. I'd clean it up, take better pictures, describe it better, and then put it on eBay and actually make a profit. And I kept doing that. And I would go to, you know, stores that were going out of business and garage sales, et cetera. And then one day a friend said, hey, I got a solution for you, because that's a lot of work. I mean, you're probably making $25, $30, $40 a transaction just to do all of that. And you got to do lots of transactions just to eat. And I live in Southern California and, everything is more.
Sure.
It's the sunshine tax, I call it.
That's right.
So a friend comes to me and says, hey, I got a solution for you. I'm like, please, I need some help. He's like, you should become a real estate investor. Now, mind you, he understood everything that was going on in our life. He knew that we had a credit score at this time of 398. We couldn't really put $75 together because I'm fighting to make sure we eat. And so that people are really, really clear, on a Thursday, Friday, or Saturday, I would have to go try and find something at a garage sale. And if I didn't sell it that next 24 to 48 hours, we would not have had food or gas or electricity to, you know, use to eat and drink and et cetera. That's really
wow.
Where it was.
Holy cow.
And he says to me, you should get involved in real estate investing. And I don't know, Ken, if you've ever seen a dog turn their head to the side.
Yo, I got a mental picture.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm like, I don't understand how this is the solution. But it was one of the few times I didn't let what we didn't have stop us. And I'm sure you've experienced this. You've seen this many times when I coach people, I say, hey, write the offer. And they respond to me, I don't have the money. I didn't ask you if you had the money. I said, write the offer. You don't even need the money yet. Mm-hmm. There's so much more that comes before. And it was one of the few times where I personally had made that type of decision where I knew I didn't have the credit. I knew I didn't have the money. He knew it, but it didn't change the recommendation. It didn't change the prescription. So we went to go find out. And like I said, by this time, you know, we had lost our primary residence. That was on February 13th of 08. So ladies, for those of you listening, if you think you ever had a bad Valentine's gift, compare the two, and I promise you, your guy did better. And you know, that's really how it started. 4 months after that, on June 18th, we still kind of celebrate that day because that was the day I closed on my very, very first transaction using subject to as the strategy. So we just took over the payments. I found the contractor to put the, you know, bathroom, I think it was the bathroom, the electric and the AC back together. We then found a tenant and I found the property manager who found the tenant. And they put it all back together, and I raised like $12,000 to pay for all of those people and to do those things. And we had about a $200 a month cash flow, and I was off to the races, so to speak, because the day we closed on that property, we were still squatting a bank-owned property. So,
are you serious?
It was pretty funny.
You worked from the other side of the system. Whatever investor complains about, you were actually that guy for a short period of time.
Exactly. I was that guy.
That's awesome.
Exactly. So if you have a squatter in any of your properties, it could have been me. No, I'm just
that's right. But yeah, have a little compassion, right?
It's just like, it's crazy, but that was the beginning of a mindset change. That was the beginning of a whole lot of new world things that were going to be offered to us, you know. And 3 weeks after that, we did 11 transactions in a week, and I started wholesaling, and I did 11 transactions. I remember, well, $2,000 each, had never seen anything near that kind of money in a week, and was like, wow, this is really happening.
And that was the first year, so that was right out of the gates?
So the first 6 months of 08, nothing. Last 6 months of 08, we started doing wholesaling, et cetera. We probably did a little over two dozen or close to two dozen transactions, ended up with just over a six-figure income for that year.
Wow.
In a six-month period. And most of that was, like I said, wholesaling over and over and over and over and over again.
Unbelievable. So talk about inspiring for somebody literally starting out with nothing.
Yes.
And in 6 months, earning six figures by wholesaling.
Well, let's be clear, Ken. If I had started out with nothing, that would have been a step up from where I was.
You had negative, actually. You were in the red when you started.
Yeah. Let's just be really, really clear. Let's paint the picture. There's a lot about life. I mean, you know, I know what it's like to have your kids come to you because this happened. You know, Daddy, what's for dinner? And I not have an answer. I know what it's like to, and we did this. Fortunately, my wife's parents, they live up the street in Long Beach, and we would go to their house and stay a really long time. We'd go around lunchtime, and we definitely would stay at least until it was time for dinner because we wanted the kids to eat.
Oh my
That's
gosh.
How the kids would eat.
Wow.
And I had to make sure that happened. Your intensity changes. You know, real estate wasn't for me an option. It would be nice to one day, if I could only build a real estate portfolio, that was not the option. And many people, when they're playing real estate, they play it as an option. Like, you know, hey, if I don't do this, at least I'll be okay.
Yeah.
Well, that was not on the table for us.
You had a lot more motivation. There's a lot of guys that are working full time saying, you know, hey, maybe I'm going to wholesale a deal or two on the side.
Right.
For you, there was nothing on the side. This was it. It was make it or break.
It was, yes, it was that or, well, it, and the thing was that I knew there was going to be a point that the sheriff was eventually going to catch up with us. So there was this looming deadline. I never knew when it was coming. So I had to make something happen. So every day the sheriff didn't come was like, okay, cool. I got another day to try to make something happen. And wow. I remember it very, very well. The Friday I picked up all those checks, that same Friday, I got the notice that the sheriff was coming.
Oh my gosh.
I wish I was making this up. And so we spent that weekend immediately because we weren't planning on doing that weekend. But suddenly that weekend became, we need to find a place to stay right now because they're going to be here. I think it was a Wednesday or it was a Monday. I don't remember which. They were coming and we knew it. So now we had to not only find a place to stay, but get our stuff moved. Fortunately, I had, you know, $22,000 in cash talks. Cash trumps credit every day.
Oh, no doubt.
So I was able to negotiate my way into an apartment complex. I mean, when the lady pulled up, did our application, it was all kinds of red. She was like, don't rent. Nobody, I would not have passed your tenant scoring credit check, I promise. But I negotiated my way into a place to stay for my family because I didn't have any other option.
Yeah.
And it was like, we need a place, and we did whatever we had to do. I don't even remember how much more we had to pay, but it didn't really matter.
Yeah. Cause
I was gonna pay it.
Yeah.
And we, that's what we did. And then I remember calling my friends over saying, hey, we're, the sheriff's coming. I need your help to get all my stuff out and move it. And the funny thing is some of those friends now are investors because they're just like, how on earth? I remember helping you move. I remember the situation. Right. How did you go from that to this?
It really is. It's an unbelievable story. I mean, the fact that you went literally from squatting in REO houses to building what you have now, it's just, that's in a pretty short amount of time. I mean, we're not talking that many years ago, 08, 7 years ago.
Well, true, but it short is relative. If you were there experiencing it,
yeah,
it doesn't feel short. It's kind of like the Lex Luthor drop of doom at Six Flags. It's only probably a 20-second ride, but it feels like minutes when you're being dropped from that high. It's not,
no doubt.
It's not, short.
So you get into the apartment. You're sort of, you feel a little bit of a sigh of relief, I guess. You'd earn some money.
Mm-hmm.
You're in Southern California too, which isn't even the easiest market to wholesale in. How'd you go about just creating a business out of thin air?
Well, that was the thing. It's all about learning to package your time differently and understanding the concept of one word, value. Value is in the eye of the beholder. And convenience is something that our marketplace values, which is great. And to give you an example of what I mean simply by convenience, if I said, hey, let's go get some meat for a barbecue, very few of you are going to say, okay, let me grab my gun and go shoot some buffalo or cow. Or let me go hunting. Very few of you are going to think.
Well, there's some guys in Georgia that would do that.
That's true. I said very few. I know there are some. But my point is, most people would go, okay, I'll go down to the store and pick up some meat. Now, you might have your favorite store, grocery store, chain store, butcher store, organic, all these other things. The point is, that whole process is you're paying more, in theory, because of the entire chain of value that was created. Somebody went out and butchered and someone raised the beef, someone butchered the beef, someone packaged the beef, and then they got it to the store. And you pay for all of that inside the chain.
That's right.
And I learned that same thing exists when it comes to real estate. Because see, what I was doing on eBay at the beginning, right, I was buying other people's quote-unquote junk, and I would clean it up. I paid them the price they asked for, or at least I negotiated for. I cleaned it up, and then I put it on a bigger marketplace and offered it to more people. The person who saw it said, hey, I will pay X. You know, they had a fair price to pay for it. It was total auction style. They paid what they wanted to pay for it, which just happened to be more than I paid for it. And I just made sure I kept doing that. The same thing is true for real estate. Mm-hmm. With wholesaling specifically, it's just like standing in line, holding somebody's place in line. I mean, you did this in high school. You did this in elementary school. You asked people to hold their place in line. They just did it out of the kindness of their heart. They could have easily have said, hey, yeah, sure, I'll do so and charge you a fee. And if you felt it was worth it, you would do so. I mean, people do it for their iPhones all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, when the new iPhone comes out, somebody's going to stand in line. You're like, hey, man, can you go stand in line for me? Sure. You buy me an iPhone and I'll stand in line. And some people make that deal. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, I'll pay you $20 to go stand in line. That's really all I did because I didn't have the resources to actually close on any of these properties.
Right.
I just knew that other people wanted them. And then I learned that they would pay me $2,000 if I packaged it right and sold it to them. I'm like, well, shoot, I'll go find it, package it in here. And that resulted in $2,000 because they didn't have the time to pack the time or the understanding or knowledge on how to negotiate that package and present it in such a way. And I did. And they valued that. Mm-hmm. And that's really what it came down to is value. So I connected what I called the land of money, which is California, with the land of cheap housing, which is anywhere other than California, New York, Hawaii, etc. You know, because that's really what it is. And we just created that bridge.
So were most of the houses then that you were wholesaling initially out-of-state houses?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Illinois, Florida.
Oh, interesting.
Illinois probably was where we did the most. We did some in Florida. We did Michigan. Obviously Tennessee. Well, not Tennessee. It was mostly apartment buildings. Georgia. That's right.
Say, yeah,
how did I forget Georgia? Yeah, yes.
Raising my hand over here. You couldn't see me.
Yeah. I think it was Stone Mountain, to be specific.
Yeah.
For sure. So, yeah, they were definitely out of state because the economics in California on a price per square foot level or the operational expenses or your contribution margins, they don't make sense in California on a residential real estate level, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I think residential real estate in California is still overpriced. In fact, I refuse to participate in the sense of purchasing anything. I intentionally rent because it just doesn't. The numbers, the economics don't make sense. They just can't make them make sense.
Well, you can take that same money and put it elsewhere and get such a higher return on your investment. Then why would you not just rent where you live?
Exactly. And that's basically what it comes down to. I mean, it's just, and especially with the type of house that my wife's been talking about trying to buy.
Better rent.
I'm like, we'll rent. we'll rent.
I know, it's funny, I know a lot of my counterparts that are in, same thing, Southern California. And I was surprised at how many of them rented, but then you see the level of a house that you can get for rent where, you know, it would cost you so much more to buy that. And then all of a sudden you've got the ups and the down real estate cycle. I mean, you could be negative 400,000 at the blink of an eye. I mean, it's just so volatile.
That's a bathroom break.
Right. It's great. Yeah. That it makes sense. Just rent, live in a nice house, and then take that money and put it across the country.
Indeed. For what some of these houses go for, you can buy a multi-unit apartment. I'm talking 30, 40, 50, 60 units somewhere else. So it's
That's crazy.
I don't know how to rationalize that one.
Yeah. So you sort of take this skill of finding deals out of state, and eventually, I'm assuming then you sort of made that transition to, okay, I'm going to start raising money. I don't want to just be the middleman anymore. What did that look like?
Yeah, well, and that's what happened is it occurred to me, like, 1 year we did like 90 transactions. So mm-hmm. I was like, wow, that was a lot. That was fun. That was awesome. And then I was like, hold on, wait a minute. I got to do that again.
Right. Yeah. I got to start over. Wait a second.
And all the people were still, they're still getting their monthly check. And I'm just like, how can I be them? You know? And right. that's what started it. And I was like, well, I know how to find them. Now I just got to figure out how to keep them. And then I was like, well, I got to have the money to keep them, so let me raise the capital. Where's that going to come from? And it was a new level of thinking of how to structure, you know, debt deals, debt raises, etc., in order to be able to hold on to the property. And then I started buying 10, 20, 30 houses at a time. And then it just got to the point to where I had a whole bunch of single family houses one day. And my then CFO accountant said to me, and I remember it quite well, because I was we were at a convention or a training event, and she saw me. I was sticking. I was doing some marketing. I thought I was being efficient, so I was marketing. I was sending out some letters, and I was stamping all of licking envelopes myself and signing them and doing the thing. And she just said, "Mr. J. Massey," and when I heard the tone, and I was like, "I'm in trouble." She's like, "You should not be doing that." And I'm like, "But what? I just got another house. That's $200 a month." She's like, "Your time is worth blah 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 blah. You should not be." I was just like, "Okay, so what should I be doing? When you close a deal, it needs to be $2,000, $3,000, $5,000 or more a month." And I'm like, "Well, how do you do that?" She's like, "That's your problem. You figure it out." I was like, "Okay." And the only thing I thought of after that was, well, I guess it has to be an apartment building. It was the only thing I knew at the time that could add a zero on that monthly number. So yeah, that's when we made the switch. Since I had already gotten to the point of how to raise the capital, it was just like, well, I just have to buy something different. And that's when we switched to apartment buildings.
How many years ago was that where you sort of made that transition from single family to multifamily?
That was 2010.
2010.
That's that 5 years now?
Yep, about 5 years ago. And so is that primarily what you and the equity fund that you've raised, is that what you guys have been buying since then, or has that even evolved in the last 5 years?
Well, that's evolved too, because I learn quickly and I learn things, and there are things I like about it, and we'll still do more of it, but there are things I don't like about it. And then I switched to, so the most recent acquisitions, well, we had a 182-unit apartment building, then we bought a commercial building, and we have a cell phone tower. Those are probably our most recent acquisitions. Now we're looking for more commercial retail, more cell phone towers and storage units. I've also considered movie theaters because I just like movies.
You can walk in and say, hey, I own this place, just so you guys know.
That's kind of the thought process. It's like, well, cool, maybe I can go now without having to pay. I mean, you know how much that popcorn is?
Oh, my gosh. The free popcorn alone would be worth it.
Exactly. I'll make it up in a month. It'd be good.
That's right. Seriously. That's interesting. I don't think I've ever even seen a movie theater for sale or know what like a good cap rate would even be on a movie theater.
There's a number of them, and there's this new, I don't know if it's really new, but there's this concept of the, you know, the whole dine in your seat type of thing.
Yes.
Going on. So, and they've, that concept is caught on, and it's become popular, and especially at the ones that can serve alcohol, those, yeah.
Yep. Yeah, they've got that figured out. Yeah. If I went to one, like, we've got a couple here in Atlanta, and I went to one a couple weeks ago, and the only annoying thing about it is because people are drinking, they want more and more drinks. And so you got these waiters walking in front of you the entire movie, like continuing to keep these glasses full.
Right.
So, the concept works.
The first one I went to was out there in Atlanta. I was doing an event and they took me to I was like, this is awesome. Like, I like this. Where are these in Orange County? And then obviously I got off the plane and found them immediately because it's the best thing ever.
It's pretty cool. Especially if the seats recline, man, then you're dialed as money.
Well, the problem is if the movie's bad, I've fallen asleep more.
That's true. You're already really comfortable.
Yes. Because my wife, she even brings a blanket. It's pretty funny.
Just in case.
Yep.
So, man, so you're putting these equity raises together and looking at all sorts of units. Maybe take 2 seconds and just help us understand how you structure a typical, like a commercial or a multifamily deal. What does that typically look like for you?
Got it. And here's the thing. My deal structure is always a result of the investor's needs, because I developed this technology that I call the profit analysis quadrant that helps me to understand, or helps investors understand, what are the benefits that you can get inside of a deal. Because I learned that many people, they think they want to be involved in real estate, but really what they just want is the benefits of real estate, mm-hmm. without actually doing a lot of the, you know, hands-on dirty work, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So I had to learn, using my financial planning background, and relate that to people, because some people just want growth and some people are looking for steady, you know, income, and some are looking, they're okay. They want the unpredictable but possible growing income, and some want just bunch of tax advantages. I mean, I've had investors say to me, hey, Jay, I need no more cash. So, okay, cool. That means maybe growth and tax advantages is where we need to slant and structure this deal for you. Hmm. There are others, especially when they're using a retirement plan, things like growth and are very, very good. I mean, you can put lots of growth and defer taxes, et cetera, and not have to pay. So, you know, when you're doing a reposition or a value add opportunity, that's when it makes sense there. And I tend to break it down, like I said, using the PAQ is what we call it inside our community. And we break it out into one of four categories. It's a standard equity and standard debt, and then what we call modified equity and modified debt. So, you know, the standard equity is typically what most people are used to, you know, where everybody puts in, you know, 10 grand each for the $100,000, and you go get a loan and you now split it all up that way.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Yep.
The standard debt is, again, the inverse of that. Instead of, so the you're raising the actual mortgage or debt piece from individual investors, and then they all own an undivided interest in that first position note, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other two are where we begin to mix and match how you can share, you know, percentages of the growth and percentages of the tax advantages and percentages of the cash flow, et cetera, back and forth, depending on what the investors need. So we've done work now with a number of investors in various different life stages and positions. For example, older investors, they want this, they like the predictability of what we call quadrant three or debt income, because it's going to be the same all the time. Boom, mm-hmm. boom, boom. People who are in that pre-retirement accumulation stage, they can be the growth, or they sometimes want the cash flow aspect because they like the fact that some months it could be really, really high, and they have the potential for gaining more than just that predictable share, which is great. And there are, you know, certain times, and the fun thing is you can do this with any one real estate transaction. They all have these benefits in there, but it's learning how to split them up and share them with people So, and I'm always telling everybody, your deal structure should be a result of the needs of your investors, as opposed, because I've, and this is how I learned all that, is we were paying people checks over and over and over again. And my CFO calls me one day. She's like, Jay, on this quarterly call, can you please tell people to cash their check? I'm like, what do you mean? She's like, they're not depositing their check. I'm like, what? I don't understand. And then when I got on the phone with them, I was like, hey guys, why aren't you depositing a check? They're like, we don't need the money. We weren't planning on using it. I'm like, what? Then I'm like,
why am I giving it to you?
Exactly. That was the, why am I giving it to you? And they're like, I don't know.
Interesting.
I'm like, okay. And then when you think about it, if you're growing a business, so think about a traditional business. If you're paying a dividend, that's money that doesn't go into R&D research and further expansion. I'm like, well, if you don't want it, I could use it to go into quote unquote R&D research further expansion. So let's slant the return to be more on the growth side and less on this cash flow quarter after quarter after quarter, because you're not going to use it anyway. And that's when that began to see that that would be an example of a very simplified modified equity deal. So it was doing those types of things that began that way I can hit my investors' exact needs without waste. Because many times what happens is us as syndicators or promoters or what have you, we end up giving away more of the deal than we have to simply because you know, there's a whole bunch of other benefits that we're also giving away that they have no use for or not using and or don't plan on using, or someone else in the deal could actually get more value from. And those things are important to understand.
Interesting. So do most of your folks invest in like a private placement fund that you're then able to steer, or are they actually investing in specific projects, or is a little bit of both?
It usually depends on contribution amount. So okay. I got both. So those who contribute the most tend to be direct, closer to the asset. When you, you know, if you have enough funds to the table for the entire deal, then yeah, you can be direct. That's easy.
Yep.
But if I still have to go get other investors, then yeah, it's going to be some sort of syndication or partnership or something. It's going to be something, whatever the SEC guys tell me that I got to do this time.
Yeah, right. Whatever the rules are this year.
Yes, exactly.
I hear you. Yeah, be careful what you say, right?
Exactly.
It's nuts.
Exactly. Whatever they say, that's what it is.
It's. I tell you, though, that it's such a really strong principle, though, that you mentioned there, that it's a good reminder for me. I even put a little star by it. You know, when talking to potential investors, it's so much more important to understand what they need rather than what you need at that moment. Because even they may not be a good fit for the project that you're pitching.
Correct.
But if they feel like you're understanding their needs, it may be 6 months down the road that there's a project that fits those needs that you can then put them into. And for you, I imagine you have a stable of investors that probably are earmarked with, okay, this person would fit this type of deal and this person fits this. And then when the need arises, you go back to that stable and you've already got them sort of categorized.
That's exactly right. It's a process we call investor identity. And we, in the first part of our intake process, we do what we call an investor identity interview, in which we discover those very things so that I know, all right, so the next time we're doing a value add reposition, these people, you know, that fits for them. The next time we're all we're doing is buying something that exists, that already exists, it has very limited upside, maybe some upside, but not a lot. But it's already going to cash flow from the beginning, that's going to be these people. When we're building something ground up, that's going to be these people. You know, sure. All of those things, while they're all real estate, they're all something completely, completely different. And it's a completely different emotional makeup and expectations, et cetera, all the way through the channel.
Yeah. Man, what a great structure. Now, who on your team is out there looking for potential investment opportunities?
I still, that is the function I still do. Okay. I have not successfully found someone good enough to actually do that. So I still am the, when it's time to put a deal together, that still falls into my space. I still maintain direct relationships with the investors at the moment. So that's still me.
Yep.
Most everything else is done by somebody else, though.
I'm sure at some point you got people sending you deals, though. I mean, people know you at this point. I'm sure you're getting stuff across your desk, and you're quickly vetting it. Probably, maybe, no, trash. Okay, look, yeah.
30 seconds.
Totally, right.
30 yeah. seconds, often less than that.
Yeah.
At the end of the day.
I gotcha. Well, man, you have put together a pretty awesome business in a relatively short amount of time. Super inspiring story. I'm curious, though, over the last, you know, 5-7 years that you've been at this, mm-hmm. is there one deal? You put together some pretty awesome deals. Is there one deal that stands out in some ways, like your best deal ever?
Well, and that's and I knew you were going to ask that. And I'm just like, see, some are the best deal because, in my opinion, the best deals are the deals that, to some degree, actually go wrong because that you, and I've told so many people this, you do your first deals for experience, not profit, mm-hmm. and then later you get to profit from your experience. Mm. So instead of being so focused on, man, how much money did I make on this one? How much money did I make? I'm always, how much did I learn? What did I learn on this one? Because once I've learned something on this one, that makes me, my company, stronger, better, and we then therefore can take on bigger projects. And that's kind of what happened and how we ended up at 100 with 182 unit building is because we had had a situation in which our property managers had embezzled around $800,000 and it shook us.
Oh my gosh.
But we were able to come together, figure it out. We got better. And that then gave me the confidence to know that if I go out for this bigger property, my team's not going anywhere. They're going to be there. They're going to be strong. We're going to be able to overcome challenges together. I wouldn't have known that, and nor would I have tried. I promise you, I would not have gone for that 182 unit building. In fact, it got to the point so much so that when it was time, due diligence was done, inspections were over, everything looked great. And I'm just like, I don't know. My team said, Jay, we got you. It's like, okay, because you said that, I'm going to move forward. And the only reason they were able to say that is because they saw how we responded to all the, you know, mess that happened and the fallout and et cetera, and how we just got it back on track, how we had to work with the mayor through that. That came some great relationships. We had to work with the city, code enforcement. I mean, learned so much and made us.
Interesting.
In my opinion, the company that we are, you know, today.
You know, you're not the first person who's used their best deal ever as their first deal. And I think that's the case for a lot of people. Not that this was your first deal, but maybe it was your first big deal that really kind of gave you that confidence. And that's sort of that's a common theme in the best deal ever episodes is you learn so much, but you also get so much more confidence because you've gone through that first deal. Even if it wasn't a big money maker, maybe it was an average deal in terms of how much you made, but just like you said, the learning experience, the confidence that to go on to do the next deal. And you learned a lot about your team. Okay. I've got this solid group of people around me. Let's do it again.
Exactly. And the only way you're going to find that out is through adversity, unfortunately. Yeah. But when you do find it out and you know that they're there, that creates it opens up a new world of possibility for you. You're like, well, if we can do that, why can't we go take down like a Walgreens? That's one of the other things that I've been looking at, but most of those are already built and not a whole lot of value add there. But, you know, why can't we go take down, you know, something like that? Why, what's to stop us?
And that's right.
The answer in most cases is nothing.
That's right. Believing in yourself, believing in your team, and now that you got this experience behind yourself to do that. So, Jay, okay, tell us where we can find you. I know you've got a phenomenal podcast. I want my audience to know about your podcast, your website. Where can we steer people?
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for that opportunity. The podcast is at cashflowdiarypodcast.com. Cashflowdiarypodcast.com. We just crossed the 200 episode mark. Pretty excited about that.
That's a lot of work.
Yes.
Trust me, I know.
Yes, I know you do. I know you do. And, you know, we've got all kinds of guests, on there. We've actually had Russell Gray from the Real Estate Guys. We've John Assaraf, for those of you who know, we've got real estate people, non-real estate people. We're always talking about cash flow, ways to make it happen, the things that business owners need to know, in order to grow, et cetera. And then, if it's okay, I'd like to give them a free electronic copy of my book, and then they can definitely take advantage of learning the profit analysis quadrant. I mean, because Ken, how many times have you heard people from the front of the room say, "You can do a deal on the back of a napkin"?
Right? Too many times. Yeah, absolutely.
They never tell you how to do
it. Yeah.
And I was frustrated, so that's why the profit analysis quadrant came into being. And it allows, you know, myself and others to go out there and do deals on the back of a napkin for sure.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate you giving away the free book. I'll make sure that we have the link on our website, guys, in the show notes. I'll make sure you also have a link to the podcast. Again, it's cashflowdiarypodcast.com. He also has a website, cashflowdiary.com, that you can go to as well, learn a little bit more about him. Jay, thanks so much for being on the show, man. This was great.
Thank you for having me. It's been fun.
All right. We'll talk to you soon. Take care.
All right.
Hey, Deal Farm podcast listeners, this is Ken Corsini with a special offer. If you go to our website right now, dealfarm.net, you have the ability to download our new blueprint. It's called 30 Days to 10K. It's basically the exact blueprint you need to start profiting from wholesaling real estate right now. It's the resources, it's the websites, it's the services that we use. I've even included my exact postcard that I send out. Basically everything you need to start getting deals in the next 30 days. Again, it's at our website, dealfarm.net. Check it out. You can download it for free. Also, we still have our free t-shirt offer. If you want a free Deal Farm podcast t-shirt, just subscribe through iTunes to our podcast and give us a 5-star rating, and then go through our website, contact us, give us your name, address, and t-shirt size, and we will send you a t-shirt in the mail immediately. As always, thanks so much for listening to the Deal Farm. We'll see you on the next episode. Take care.